Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, December 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Time once again for the Science Forum on our program today. We welcome back our panel of brilliant scientists to the program. Ed Stander, Barbara Brabets, and Jim Pickett are here to answer your questions. And you know what, boys and girls? We will have a musical interlude today, and I think you'll find it very interesting. If you have access to a computer, you can watch the proceedings at WAMC.org. Just click live video. And something very interesting will happen today musically. Our number is 800-348-2551. Again, it's a science show, not a music show. We'll explain all that after we begin the show. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And we'll start the show right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we convene the Science Forum, and our number is 800-348-2551. If you have a scientific question, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number here on the program is 800-348-2551. So, without further ado, let's meet our panel of experts.
Hi, I'm Barbara Brabets from SUNY Cobleskill, and I'm a biochemist.
I'm Jim Pickett. I'm an organic chemist.
Ed Stander, astronomy, geology, and anything that Barbara or Jim can't answer.
Okay, Ed, I got to say, I'm thirsty for brandy, and I'll tell you why. There are a number of snifters here in front of us. You brought glasses. Why did you bring glasses?
Well, I can't see a thing without them, actually.
Hey, that's funny stuff. You're already in mid-show form.
Yeah, that's it. I'm sitting here in front of 12 glasses, 6 brandy snifters, 6 wine glasses.
Okay.
And they've got water in 3 of them, actually 4 of them, and the rest of them are empty.
Okay.
And I got 2 bowls of water in front of me. That's good Albany City water.
Mmm, delicious. And, it is actually fine.
Yeah, so I sit here and I rub the top of the glasses.
All right, so we talked about this on the last show.
Right.
You will play us music on the glasses. This is like Ed Sullivan now. Topo Gigio will be out in a little bit.
Oh,
no, Ed Stander actually.
Hey, all right, let's hear it.
What do you want to hear?
Oh, can you play us a nice holiday favorite?
Sure.
Amazing. Now, can you do some Zeppelin?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, he really can do Zeppelin. Amazing.
That enough?
Oh, yeah, War Pigs by Black Sabbath? No? All right, forget
Please
it.
Please don't do all 14 right, minutes
don't,
of Stairway.
That's fine. That's fine. This is amazing. So, Ed Stander, how does this work? Now we'll bring it back to science.
Yeah, it's a bunch of wine glasses. And wine glasses are just like bells. And what I'm doing with them is I'm rubbing the top of the glasses with wet fingers, and I'm playing them as if they're a violin, where the glass itself, what happens as I rub the top of the glass, my finger sticks to the glass, and it actually distorts the glass, and it snaps back, just like a violin on a bow.
Yeah.
Where the rosin catches a string and then snaps it back. I do the same thing, but with water on the top of glasses. So they're bells. Doesn't make any difference. And I'm just... distorting the glass. In fact, if I play one of these glasses fast, the water inside actually revolves around. I used to have a fish in there, but I've been told not to do that anymore.
I'm glad you didn't bring a fish to the show.
I'm sure the radio audience can see this.
Well, people are watching at WAMC.org.
There we go.
Fascinating. And you tune it by adding different amounts of water?
That's right. Although most of these glasses are empty, the sound depends on the thickness of the glass, the size of the glass, and the amount of water in it. And what the cool thing is that wherever my finger touches the glass, it actually quiets it. So as I go around the glass, if I go fast enough, you can actually get a nice tremolo effect. So, for example, slowly it sounds like that, but fast.
Oh, yeah. Do your own vibrato.
Yeah, you can actually make it sound. Here, I can show you. Make it sound exactly like a steel drum. Here, listen.
Okay.
Let's see. I got to change the key. Just a second.
Right. He's a turkey baster. Now it's Food Friday.
Right.
Yeah, it's great.
He's sucking water out of a cheap wine glass.
So this is something that you, while you're tuning here, this is something you have done for a long time. How did you get into this?
I used to be a drunk. No. Basically, there's a music written for it by Mozart and Beethoven. It was very popular in the 1700s. And there was an album made in the 1930s, and the fellow was playing it on the back of the album. And I said, well, any fool could do that. And then I spent 10 years putting one together.
And you do concerts?
Oh, yeah, all around the world. I just came back from Singapore, Japan, and China.
Good money in that?
Well.
Better than, say, professor work?
Certainly better than professor.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great. All right, let's hear a little bit more, and then we'll take calls at 800-348-2551. Beautiful. Ed Stander. That's amazing.
Didn't Benjamin Franklin invent a modification of this?
Yeah, well, because they're just a bunch of wine glasses, over the years, everybody who made them made more and more and more. And there came to a point there were over 120 glasses in a set. I've got a 66 glass set at home. It's a piano bar. Trying to carry it around is almost impossible.
You need a roadie.
Right. And so what he did is he turned all the glasses on their side, cupped one inside the other, put an axle through the center, and ran the whole thing on a treadle.
No, I've seen that.
Glass harmonica, right?
And it sounds the same?
It sounds very different because where I'm playing it, my fingers rotate around the top of the glass, and so if I'm pointing towards you, it's actually quieter, so I get the tremolo effect. In the case of a glass harmonica, the glasses are rotating. Your fingers are always in the same position, so it sounds more like an organ. This is more like a flute, so it's a somewhat different sound.
When you're playing a gig, do you have backup glasses? What happens if you drop the thing?
Oh, I've got, I usually carry about a dozen extra glasses with me just in case.
Amazing.
I've had people throw money through them. I've had everything happen.
And can you play it in other things besides water?
Well, I've tried it with beer. That works for about a half an hour, then it goes flat. I've played the Blue Danube with Blue Danube water.
Oh, nice.
Which is very nice. I've played it with water from Lourdes. It sounds exactly the same. And in some places, I can't play at all because the water has too much mineral, for example. And as I'm playing, the water evaporates, and as it evaporates, it coats the top of the glass with calcium, and I can't play.
What about scotch?
I haven't tried scotch, although it'd probably be good for Irish music.
Or, if you're from Kentucky, bourbon.
Well, for sure.
But the density of the fluid doesn't really matter so much.
Really, no. What the water does is it actually couples with the glass so that the glass appears to be more massive, and that drops the tone. So if you put something in that's got, well, things with bubble don't work. Beer doesn't work at all. Because
the Mountain Dew is not a good medium.
It doesn't work at all. You get buzzing instead of sound.
Oh, interesting.
In fact, it's really funny because when I audition glasses, try to find glasses that are what I'm looking for.
Yes. I auditioned some glasses myself.
Well, It's a lot of fun because if there's a glass that's broken, it starts to buzz almost immediately. So I walk into a store and I say, I'd like to audition your glasses. And they say,
security?
They let me into the back room, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, and there's thousands of glasses there, and I try them all, and I find the ones that I need, and then I come out and I say, well, I'd like this one and that one.
Wow. Well, this is. I think the whole show is downhill from here, but let's take a call or two. 800.
Do they ever let you back in?
No, but the glasses are all dirty when I leave.
What happens if you break one? Will you cut? Have you been cut during a performance?
No, but I did a show once in the theater where Boris Karloff started, and we decided to have some fun with it. So I put on fake fingers with red blood inside or red glue, and as I was playing it, the fingers would fall off and the blood would fall down the side. It was absolutely beautiful.
You know, I'm not surprised.
Stunning, stunning.
800-348-2551 is the number. Alan in Lansingburg, you're first. Alan.
Oh, great. Thank you. When I'm washing dishes at night in hot water gets a little hotter as it runs. And if I add cold water to it, it stings a little bit more. It feels a little hotter for a bit. Why?
Oh, so you're talking about your hand?
Yes, it feels hotter on my hands. Well, if I add a little bit of cold water to a good flow of hot water.
Right, and are you touching the actual flow coming out of the faucet, or are you keeping your fingers in the body of water that was mostly hot and is now getting colder?
I'm under a flow of water. My hands are under the faucet.
Right. So the nerve that stimulates the sensation of cold and hot actually stimulates pretty much exactly the same way, whether it's cold or hot. So at the extremes of temperature, you're going to get that same sensation. if you have a material like a liniment like Icy Hot or menthol, it gives you that same sensation. You get both kind of you don't really get the visual cues or the other cues for your body to know whether it's hot or cold. So it kind of feels like both at the same time. And the same is true with the extremely hot and extremely cold water.
But this is not extremely cold. This is a hot water stream.
Right, but you've already activated the nerve.
I add a little bit of cold water to take away the heat, and it feels, it stings a little bit more.
Right, because you've already activated the nerve.
All right.
Okay.
Well, Alan, thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a break here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. It's the Science Forum.
Support for WAMC comes from Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy, eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. Sage Wine and Spirits, Ballston Spa, New York. Providing worldwide, sustainable, and organic wines and spirits, offering weekly tastings, sagewineandspirits.com. Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony. Locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, realseafoodco.com. And Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Huntsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Huntsberger.artistwebsites.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, the Science Forum. Ray Graff here today, joined by Ed Stander, Jim Pickett, and Barbara Brabitz. And this one came in via email. This is from Christopher. What causes hoarfrost to be so different from regular frost? What is hoarfrost?
Why is everyone looking at me?
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's a joke there, but I'm not talking.
No.
Hoarfrost might be caused by droplets of water being frozen. I think it's just a very kind of coarse kind of frost where you may see it on places like near the ocean or near a body of water where water gets blown off in little droplets and then freezes onto whatever it runs into.
Okay.
So most frost is a condensation of existing air moisture where the temperature drops and the air can't hold that moisture anymore because solubility of water and air changes with temperature. So it condenses. And so when it condenses from the gas, it's going to make that nice thin layer. Just like smoke would in a house, if you then condense the smoke down, you're going to get that film, that very kind of like that thin gray color that, smokers have on their walls and so on and so forth. So it's that same phenomenon, only bigger droplets.
And there's, of course, the other kind of hoarfrost. There's several types of hoarfrost, but the columnar stuff that forms in forest, for example, when you're walking down is also sometimes called hoarfrost. And what that is water actually coming out of the ground by capillary action. Huh. And it can lift the entire surface of the ground, the forest cover, up a little bit. So that rocks that are on top of there, for example, melt their way through by the heat of the sun. And so you get this layer. You're actually walking maybe 2 or 3 inches above the ground.
And you get that crinkle, crinkle, crinkle.
Right. Amazing. Let's go to the phones and 800-348-2551. Rajiv in Burlington, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question to one of your scientists about generating music. And so I've played with similarly, like using water in a ceramic cup when when I was a child. Right. I was just wondering if there was any experiment done with respect to the liquid. So does the density of the liquid, does it matter?
The instrument I'm playing is actually very similar to a jaltaran, which is the Indian equivalent, which is a bunch of bowls that you play. And the liquid, as I say, the more dense the liquid and the less motion it has, the more turgid it is, the deeper the note becomes as you're playing. And that's basically the only difference. The big difference is that if you get another liquid on the top of the glass, then you can't play it anymore because it makes it too slippery. So water works out just fine. Some places I can't play because the water is just not right. And I've actually had, for example, to put alcohol in the water to break the greases on the top of the glass.
Amazing.
That works fine until it starts evaporating, and then people think you're drunk.
Yeah. All right, Rajiv, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. What about heavy water? Could you use that?
I've tried it.
You have?
Of course.
Of course you
what
have.
What a geek.
You
yeah,
know?
It's a lot. It's more for heavy music, you know,
right.
Deep melodic
when
stuff.
When you're doing AC/DC and
exactly.
Some of the harder rock.
And, yeah, if I'm trying to do, heavy metal, I'll use lead crystal.
You see. John in Amherst. John, you're on the Science Forum.
Yes, this is a trombone question.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. Okay.
Here's a question Ray may know the answer to. Can you explain the physics of playing a pedal tone note without changing the position of the slide?
Oh, my God. That's a great question. Of course, if you know me, John, and I guess we the note here says we played in high school.
Yeah, John Healy. We were first year standmates.
Yeah, man. You played a King 3B. I remember it all too well.
I sure did.
You still have that horn?
I sold it, actually. I'm not playing anymore. I'm doing a lot more singing these days.
Oh, good for you, man. Well, listen, as you well know, I know very little about the trombone, so let's ask the scientists. go ahead. Now, you know what a pedal tone is, right?
I don't, because I'm a piano player and voice, so I'm going to pass.
Anybody?
What's a pedal tone?
A pedal tone? Well, in other words, you can hit, I think it's with embouchure, John, without getting too much into it, but
okay.
you can hit a very low note from being in the same position, like if you're in first position, if you hit your embouchure right and loosen things up, but not too loose, you can go down an octave, and it's pretty amazing.
Well, my guess is that you're actually playing first harmonics normally on the trombone, and what happens is if you hit it just right, you get the fundamental tone of the instrument, which is one tone lower. You actually get the same thing with the glasses, where what you're hearing is the first harmonic, which is an octave above.
We lost them. That's okay.
An octave above what it should be. And what you get below that in glasses or in bells are called hum tones, which is the fundamental, which is below the first harmonic.
Amazing. All right. Well, there you go.
Hey, I think that was a great answer.
And if we have another trombonist listening, give us a call and let us know if we're wrong. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Joe in Middletown. Joe.
Hi. I'm a Ben Franklin fan, a bit of a Ben Franklin student, so I just wanted to make a distinction. The instrument he invented is the glass harmonica, no H, no harmonica like what you blow into. It's just spelled with an A, the
like
glass
Amherst.
Harmonica. And it was a big deal at the time. It was kind of a big fad instrument. Mozart even wrote stuff for it. So.
Is that like the harpsichord? Hey, you see what I did?
There you go.
Thanks for the distinction.
Thanks, Joe. We appreciate that.
The instrument I'm playing, if you want to be honest, is called a seraphim, or it's also called a musical glasses.
Seraphim.
The harmonica. It was never called a glass harmonica. It was just called an harmonica after the Italian word for harmony. And the English added the H, which threw everybody off, and that's where it went to.
Our number here is 800-348-2551.
I just wanted to say sometimes the students don't know Dr. Standard's name. They call him Dr. Standard, but they'll say, yeah, the guy with the glasses. which, you know, doesn't really make a distinction in a bunch of academics because we all wear glasses because we grade stuff. But we know who they mean.
Okay. Yeah. I'll mention as well, by the way, that the glasses were actually banned by the police and destroyed in the 1820s because they was thought to cause brain damage.
Really?
It explains a lot about me personally.
But on what evidence?
Well, apparently they thought it was the lead in the crystal that was getting into players' fingers and causing nervous disorders, but what it actually was a hoax that was perpetrated by some of the players to keep other people from playing it.
Fake news again.
Oh, fake news. That's a great bit of trivia. Mark in Albany is next. Mark, you're on.
I have a question. I don't know. It sort of relates to the hot and cold with the water, but it's a little bit different. I had a crushed disc, C4 disc, which affected nerve endings in my legs and in my hand. So unlike other people, when I feel extreme hot and cold, it's the same for me. I feel it both as a burning sensation. And I was wondering if if that was my nerve ending still. I have to use the term recording because that's the only thing I could think of. Recording that as a difference, or is it different than the way you feel hot and cold? Does the nerve endings do something different than what's happening to me, if that makes any sense?
Well, that's fascinating. I'm sorry that you have a C4 crushed disc. That's terrible. A C4 is part of the central nervous system, so it's the fourth cervical vertebrae down from where the spine enters the skull. And so there are nerves that come in and out of the spinal cord at that area, and those are the nerves that you describe that give you problems. So it isn't actually the reception of the signal at the fingertip or the toe or the top of the foot, but rather it is the transmission. Most likely I don't know the nature of your damage, but there could be a little bit of scarring on the outside of the nerve, or it could be that it's somehow compromised so that the covering of the nerve isn't quite there. So it's like static on
a line. That was actually the good news that I found out recently, because I realized when I went into a tub that I did actually feel a difference when it got extremely hot or extremely cold.
Yes.
And that's important. You would know where I'm going with this, that if someone who has diabetes, they're concerned about their feet or their arms because they would have bruises and they wouldn't know that they were there.
Right. So there it's a peripheral
it's the same
neuropathy.
Thing with me.
Yeah.
Correct.
So with diabetes,
I have neuropathy.
Yeah. So diabetes is a peripheral neuropathy, so it happens at the far end of the nerve, if you will, away from the spinal cord. And yours is a more central neuropathy. And that's why you have, as I said, static on the line. It knows that the line is ringing, but it can't quite get the clearest signal.
Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. And it's 800-348-2551. Our telephone number on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Jim and Troy, you're on the Science Forum.
Yes, I have a question about nearing the summer or the winter solstice. The shortest day, the least amount of daylight is on 21st or thereabouts, but the sunset time reaches its earliest time just about now. It's like 2 weeks before the solstice. Why does that occur? And then also on the other side of that, the sunrise time keeps getting later and later after the solstice time. In other words, it's not a symmetrical situation. I've never had a good explanation for this.
Well, first of all, the solstice is marked effectively by the time that the sun goes its furthest south and then comes back north again. So that date is just a geometrical thing associated with the fact that the sun is now gone as far south as it can, and now it's going to start north again. The time of sunrise and sunset depends on the curvature of the Earth. And that is depending on where you are, it's a function, it is a function of where you are in the Earth. So if you were directly at the sun, the time of sunrise and sunset would be different. So what you're seeing is the shadow of the Earth effectively blocking the sun at different times. So it will not be symmetrical about noon, if you will. for that reason.
And it's also a matter of the eccentricity of the Earth's orbit that affects how that is offset as well. It's, if you want to look that up, probably in Wikipedia, you look up equation of time.
Equation of time.
Equation of time, and it will tell you more than you would ever want to know about weird motions of the Earth.
But just
understandable,
though?
Understandable, yeah, sure. Yeah. And remember that the shadow isn't a square, it's a semicircle.
Right.
So that's why we have these, what we call eccentricities, but it isn't really eccentric, it's completely explainable.
Okay, but the solstice, it's equal day and night. Is it not true? Is it equal day and night?
That's the equinox. The equinox is
but the solstice is the shortest
and the
period
longest
of daylight.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The shortest and the longest. So depending on where you are on the Earth, it's either the shortest or the longest day of the year.
There you go. Yeah.
And I think if the Earth's orbit was perfectly circular, then there wouldn't be that offset with the sunrises and the sunsets. Mm.
Solar max is still about, solar noon, rather, is still just a hair after 12 o'clock, because I was recently looking at solar
calendar. Well, it depends where you are in the time zone.
Right, but I'm saying for the Albany times, for here in Albany, it was just a hair after 12, because you put in your Latin longe on solarcalc.org/com, and it will give you all of the relevant data. This is what we geeks do when we need to look at something. We go right to the source.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number on this science forum. And Barbara in Massachusetts. Barbara, you're on.
Hi. I have a large metal bowl, supposedly comprised of 7 different alloys. You take a wooden spoon or a wooden implement and you run it around the edges of the bowl, kind of like what he's doing with the water, with the wine glasses.
Yep.
And it gives off a really complex tone. Supposedly, the 7 alloys give off 7 different tones in the sound that the bowl produces. How in the world does that happen?
Well, it's actually, the alloys are equally distributed amongst the bowl, so that really has no effect. The reason why you get different tones is because the bowl has different thicknesses. And depending on where your finger is on the bowl, you'll be playing one part of it or another part. And then they interact with each other to give even more tones. So in the case of a glasses, for example, because they're blown from a sphere effectively, they're equally thick on all sides. But I have had glasses, for example, that have not been equally thick, and they give some very, very weird harmonics as a result.
Hmm.
So what you're doing is getting, when you start rubbing the top of the bowl or whatever, depending on where you're hitting it, you're playing a different part of the bowl. And depending on the thickness of the bowl in different places, and usually those things are slightly, they have slight cups as well in them as well. And depending on where you play it, you'll get different harmonics as they interact with themselves.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Barbara. I got thinking about, while you were doing this, the tuning fork and the history of the tuning fork.
Mm-hmm.
How, number one, did somebody come up with this? Number two, how are they standardized so that A440 is what we're looking for? And do you know anything about tuning forks?
Yeah, it's these are tuning forks, effectively. And
right, a single stem, and then they branch out into 2 different sides.
That's right. And what happens is if you hit one side of it, it actually gets the other side sympathetically vibrating with it so that the whole thing starts to vibrate. Tuning fork is the same thing as a... Glockenspiel or anything like that, where as long as the piece of metal that's vibrating is decoupled from what it's around, it'll continue to vibrate. So, for example, in a tuning fork and the glasses as well, the point where it's coupled is at the bottom of the glass. So the glass is vibrating, but by the time you get to the bottom, there's no sound whatsoever. And the tuning fork's the same thing. It's vibrating, but the point where it's in contact is a nodal point, and effectively there's no sound transmitted at that spot.
So like in the handle.
Right.
Yeah. And they could be calibrated using an oscilloscope or...
Wouldn't you have to calibrate it before you forged it?
Well, it's based on thickness. A lot of times, because we have a set that we use to test deafness in the lab, and they're all the same tuning forks that you would use in music. We just have a wider range, because why would you need some of those tones? But yeah, it's the thickness of the material.
Who discovered this?
I just think of a bunch of people sitting around going, hey, let's whack this piece of metal and see what it sounds like. And like,
it's as bad as the musical saw. It's exactly the same principle.
But it became standardized over the years. And this is what I find fascinating.
It only became standardized in the 1900s. You know, before, well, about 1915, 1920 was A440. Prior to that, it was different keys. So it really all depended on what people had to work with. Nowadays, if you want to tune your instruments, the best way to do it is listen to a telephone, because the hum tone on a telephone is A440.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Well, there you go. That's what I tune to all the time.
Do we even have hum tones anymore?
Well, if there's one, if it goes, that's an A440.
Oh, the things you learn. Well, this is a perfect time to take a break. 800-348-2551. It's the Science Forum, and Ed Standers here, Jim Pickett and Barbara Brabets. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953, now accepting toy donations for Toys for Tots through the end of the year. SHEEHYOpticians.com. And HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting A Charlie Brown Christmas, weekends December 9th through December 18th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org.
You see, we talk about trombones. We hear some trombones. That's local boy Doug Sertl.
How did you do that?
Awesome. It was serendipity, don't you know?
Who's that?
Doug Sertl.
Oh, I thought trombonist. Serendipity.
Oh, Serendipity? That's another.
I saw that show. That's Serendipity Doodah.
It's up the
it?
Street at the Gentleman's Club, I think Serendipity will be performing. You wanted to, Jim, clarify hoarfrost.
Yes. My explanation was correct, but for the wrong phenomenon.
All right. Refresh my memory.
What I was talking about was rime ice, R-I-M-E, and that's formed by droplets of water causing a block of ice to form on stuff.
Yeah, that could actually sink ships.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hoarfrost is what sort of what Ed was describing, or from the definition that our producer gave me from Wikipedia, from when things like wires, things out in the air on cold, clear nights cool down because of radiation cooling, and frost forms on
them. There you go. All right. Well, this one came in via email, and then we'll go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. This one came in from Tom. I have a question about LIGO. LIGO works because gravity waves distort space-time. Why don't the gravity waves also distort the matter that is embedded in the space-time? If the gravity waves distort the LIGO apparatus the same way they distort space-time, how is the measurement possible?
Well, it does distort the apparatus.
Let's give a little background to this. This is an experiment they did with a very long tube,
Yes.
In two different places.
You have to have two tubes at right angles to each other, and these things are
kilometers long.
But there's two of them, and they're far apart. Is that the trick?
Yeah. Well, the trick is that there are mirrors at the end. So light goes and bounces off and comes back and actually does that a bunch of times to make it effectively longer. So the space, the tubes are stretched out or compressed a little bit, but the light waves aren't. So the light waves will shift a little bit because the apparatus and the space around them has shifted. So that's how it's detected.
So it's like a light ruler.
Right.
Using light waves as a ruler.
So matter is actually distorted by the gravity waves, and that's what we're measuring.
How much distortion, which is really small, really, really small.
The most unbelievable thing about it is not the gravity waves per se, but the fact that a measurement could be made with that
precision. Yeah.
And have they verified this?
Yeah. They've measured this. They've measured multiple events now.
Right. So if you feel taller or smaller at any particular time, chances are it isn't the gravity wave.
Okay.
It's just your ego.
But it's like measuring less than the width of a hair in the distance between the Earth and the sun.
Yeah. Amazing. Anne in Albany, you're next.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've wondered about this for several years now, but I was at the golf course on a late winter day with my dog, and she decided to take off across the pond at top speed. The ice was kind of breaking up behind her, and then all of a sudden there was this sound just like, and that's what I commented on to my friend at the time, was it sounds like when you run your finger across the top of a glass with some water on it. You know, like, so my question, I guess, is does that mean my dog can play the pond the way he can play the glasses?
Well, that's a good question.
And yeah. You've been replaced by her dog.
Yeah, there we go. The sound you're probably hearing is actually the ice moving with water, with air underneath it. And you can actually get a sound like that caused by the air vibrating underneath the ice, which you can get if the ice is not very thick.
It was incredible that day, I'll tell you.
Wow, that's great.
Because it was loud.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it can be very, very loud. I've heard it myself. And you can't make money on it, so I play the glasses instead.
Well, no, it happened very fast, which is a good thing, or she would have drowned. But
right.
Yeah.
She would have gotten stuck underneath.
Well, Anne, thanks for the call.
All right.
Bye. Have a good one. Let's go to Joe in Scotia. Joe.
How are you?
Good.
I'm a saxophone player, but...
Well, that's too bad.
I think the current standard is 442. It's no longer 440.
You might be right.
I think about 2 years ago they changed it. The other interesting thing is I collect older saxophones, and I've got a saxophone from 1938. It was sold in Canada. In the English, the Commonwealth countries had... 436.
That's
as
right.
As their standard. The 440 was in America, I think, only at that time. So, when you're buying some of these older horns, you have to watch whether they're low pitch or high pitch because they vary by what country they were sold in.
That's right. Amazing.
And the 442.
The other interesting thing.
Well, go on.
When Beethoven wrote his stuff, it was 424. I have a recording of a modern recording of a concert of Beethoven, and all the instruments were tuned at A424, so they would play exactly how Beethoven intended it to sound, which was kind of interesting. But
right.
That's all the comments I have.
Well, that's interesting. It's only a matter of 6 hertz.
Yeah, and to think that we really have a discriminating ear, but I'm sure it would sound really flat to us if we listened to a 424A.
Well, it would sound...
Yeah, it sort of does, but they did it because that's where he composed it, all figuring it's 424. But
yeah, well, the difference, actually, the 424 would have very little effect. The difference is the temperament that the instruments were tuned in at the time. So, for example, back in the time of Bach, it was an equal temperament. And if I had a piano once, electric piano, that I tuned to equal temperament. I tuned it in the key of C, which means that everything was properly in tune in the key of C, and it sounded terrible for my ears. The reason that they go to 442 on only some instruments is that it gives just enough disharmony that it actually improves the sound of the instruments.
Fascinating.
Okay, so that is just some instruments?
Only some. The flute, for example, is at 442. Some wind instruments are tuned to 442. But the majority of the violins, for example, are all at 440.
Do you think that's because of electronic recording and the dissonance that we need in order to really have a crisp recording?
I think it has more to do with the harmonics that you get as a result of it. It makes it a fuller, much, much fuller sound.
There you are, Joe. Great call. Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a good one. 800-348-2551. David and Troy. David.
Hi there. Yeah, I got a quick question about particle physics. I understand that the Higgs boson, which imparts mass on other particles, does so by interacting with the Higgs field. But I'm not sure with what force the Higgs boson interacts with the Higgs field, right? There's four fundamental forces in nature, the strong, the weak, the electromagnetic, and gravity. Now, in theory, is it one of those forces interacting with the Higgs field, or is it something entirely different?
Boy, do we need a physicist on
the
show.
You got me on that one. I can avoid answering that question by making another comment, though.
Good for you.
And that is that most.
That's an old technique.
Yeah, that most of the mass that we're used to around us isn't really due to the Higgs boson. It's due to the energy that's holding together atomic nuclei, the gluons.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, as far as how
strong nuclear force.
Yes, exactly. How the Higgs boson is interacting with the Higgs field is well beyond my pay grade. So we do need a physicist.
Well, thanks, David. Where's Ivor?
No, we need a physicist.
Let's go to line four and Alan in Albany. Alan, you're on.
Hi, how are you? I've got another music question. So I play the congas, right? More or less two, and I tune them 1/4 apart. But I basically hear like a strong harmonic when I tune it. Mm-hmm. But I sometimes almost get like confused, like I'm hearing a natural tone come through that isn't that like big resonant harmonic. And I wonder like what the room is hearing because I'm sitting right over it. What's your thought on that, the kind of the harmonics of these hand drums?
Those I think what you're hearing is called a wolf tone.
What's a wolf tone?
Do you know what wolf tones are?
No.
Wolf, like the dog wolf?
Exactly like the dog wolf or the wolf. And basically what's happening is the room itself is taking the sounds of your instrument and combining them to make a new sound.
Huh.
And
I have that problem with the glasses as well. They're actually tones that come out that I don't expect. And depending on what the room is, it sounds differently. I've tuned my instrument beautifully in one room. And then when the people come in, the tone of the room changes.
Incredible.
And I get a totally different sound.
And so Studio A is filled with acoustic foam. That probably helps
it helps
your tuning.
It helps enormously. That's right.
So I'm glad I called because I was kind of afraid you wouldn't understand my question. So fantastic. Hey, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And I guess speaker manufacturers have the same issue.
Right. And please understand that if we don't know the answer, we make it up. So
Right. It is the music forum today anyway.
How about that? Who knew? 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. Eric in Knox. Eric.
Good afternoon, Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I had a question regarding water dowsing. What is the science behind that? Because I can do it. I have no idea how it works, and it's always puzzled me.
It's a fascinating topic.
It is fascinating. The science of it is difficult to explain because a lot of people don't know what it is. The theories are that you're finding a difference in density and that somehow your own electromagnetic field is that the other theory is that your own electromagnetic field is interacting with the EM field of a water-rich environment. So those are the two theories, is that it's the density of the material below you that you're sensing and or an electromagnetic field difference.
Well, there is a third theory as well, and that's that groundwater is all over the place.
And that you're not really doing anything.
And that you're not doing much in particular. In most cases, in some cases, there are places, for example, where there may be gravel fields underground, which will have more water than elsewhere. But to prove it, you'd actually have to do an awful lot of holes to make sure that you're actually getting what you think you are.
Well, Eric, share with us some of your anecdotal evidence.
Well, I have been able to find pipelines under the ground, septic tanks that no one knew were there. And it's, again, I have no idea how it works. But just using a forked stick that I'll take from a tree.
Are you particular?
With the point out in front of me. Yeah.
Are you particular about the stick?
Out of my hands.
Go ahead.
Are you particular about the stick that you use? What kind of stick? Because I have talked to other dowsers, and they're very...
As long as it's... I can't do it with dead sticks, but if I just cut one from a sapling or something off a fresh branch, it works perfectly.
Right. I've heard about the green... It has to be a green stick, and it can't be really too big. It has to have, you know, like a living bark.
Barbara, you seem to know a little about this. Have you talked to other people who have done this?
I've talked to them here on the Science Forum for years and years and years, but also people ask me, because I teach water chemistry, if I'm a water dowser, and I'm not.
No.
I do not have that sense.
What a fascinating concept. Eric, thank you for calling.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Bye now. 800-348-2551. Michelle in Queensbury. Michelle, you're on.
Yeah, what's a solfeggio? Solfeggio? Music frequencies, I heard.
I'm sorry, can you spell it?
S-O-L-F-F.
Solfeggio?
Uh-huh.
Well, solfeggio is...
S-O-L-F-E.
That's the sight singing, right? That's the solfege, you
is
know.
It the, I hear that there's 9 frequencies to it.
Oh, are you
do
talking
re
about...
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do?
Are you talking about...
I hear that, but it is the sound. Is that what it is?
I believe that's what it is.
That's a very good question. I don't know what it is at all.
I think that's what it is. In sight singing, you do solfege, yeah.
Not... Oh, it's called solfege? Okay, because there's tunes to each one of them. They start, I think, low and they go high. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Do a deer, a female deer, yada, yada, yada. Hey, Michelle, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. Boy, what an interesting program we have today. Mm-hmm. Samantha in Kingston, you're on the Somewhat Science Forum.
I'm afraid I have a music question, too. I know, while I was on hold, I don't know if the caller before me said something similar. But when you talked to the earlier musician about the wolf tone, it made me think of Ella Fitzgerald. When I listen to Ella Fitzgerald sing, it seems to me that sometimes she will hit a note and she's carrying the same note, but somehow it develops a different pitch or something.
Interesting. Could be
and I
that.
I never knew if that was my imagination or if this is a real thing.
Could be that. Also could be I mentioned it. The speaker manufacturers have to deal with all sorts of resonances. And maybe it's the room, maybe it's the speaker, maybe it's your head.
Could be your sinuses.
No, really,
not joking.
The sinuses are part of where the resonance happens. So as she continues to carry that note, her sinuses could shift or vibrate just like Ed's glasses here.
Yeah, you can get
you get
mouth singers who can actually get 4 or 5 notes at the same time by vibrating their sinuses.
I'm glad you can't
okay,
do
so
that.
Oh, I can.
Is she doing it deliberately? I mean, is she actually shifting the note? Because it's something that gives her voice just that distinct quality that is so beautiful.
All you have to do is close off the back of your mouth, and you'll get a totally different note, a totally different tone, because you've changed the volume of air that's moving around. Your mouth acts as what's called a Helmholtz resonator, which is the same thing as a seashell, for example. If you listen to a seashell, you hear a note depending on the size of the seashell. And that resonation depends on the size of the cavity. So as you change the size of the cavity, just by closing off your nose, for example, you can change the tonality of the note.
And so that's something that she's doing,
I'm sure of it.
And as an alto, I can tell you that, you know, sopranos have a much larger range in their mouth before they have to switch to their head. And then in altos, I just have a lower mouth to head switch. So I know at an A is where I have to switch to my head and it goes to my sinuses instead of coming from my throat, my diaphragm.
Anybody want to make a quip? Anybody? No?
No.
Okay, good. All right. Well, thank you very much. We're going to leave that one alone. And Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Hi. On the dowsing thing, I'm a physicist by training, an astronomer, and I don't have any reason to believe it, but I can douse. And I was taught by my great-grandfather when I was a little kid. My parents had a piece of property that we had a map, and he was an engineer from the GE, and he doused it, and I doused it when I was about 14. And out of 12 space spots, we picked 9 in common without either of us knowing what the other was doing. And he said that the water that we would get would be probably not the best and turned out to be very hard. My great-grandfather, when he doused our first property, he found a well that was so had such high capacity that he said you could fill the city of Schenectady with it. I think it has something to do with the fact that the water is an ion in the sense that one side tends to be negative and one side tends to be positive. And there's something in there that I can't figure out. But I've had so many experiences with dowsing where it has worked, even though I don't believe in it.
Amazing. Well, thanks, Mark. We appreciate that call. Well, I guess we're about out of time here. Anything coming up that you would like to discuss?
Finals Barbara? Week. I don't want to discuss it. It's next
no, none
week.
Of us do.
Finals week.
We'll be over soon enough.
Then the grading starts.
And that's fun, though. You have a couple of drinks. You do the grading.
Yeah, it's degrading. I stay in my pajamas for 3 days and don't take a shower, and I sleep with a pen in my hand. Yeah,
well,
perfect.
You put on some musical glass albums, kick back.
Yes, he does have a Christmas album, by the way.
You have a Christmas album?
Oh, no.
Well, by the way, somebody wanted to know, do you have a website for this, Ed, your musical endeavors?
Well, if you just look up my name, Ed Stander, I'm all over the place. It's rather frightening.
All right. Note to self, don't do that. I might do that anyway. We'll check. We'll have you back on with the musical saw next time. Hey, thanks to everybody on the Science Forum today. Support comes from Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy at No Moo Dairy Free. Handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. The Hyde Collection, an art museum at Historic House in Glens Falls, New York. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, Sunday, 12 to 5. HydeCollection.org. And Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York. Plastic surgery dedicated to cosmetic surgery, laser treatments, and minimally invasive facial rejuvenation since 1996. Wishing WAMC listeners happy and healthy holidays. 518-786-1700. Thanks again to Ed, Jim, and Barbara for being here. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Deb Malik took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday, don't you know? Chef Jasper Alexander of Hattie's Restaurant will be here. He's got a new cookbook, you know. We'll talk about that and many other things. Stand by now for news.